Is there 171,476 words in the English language, including words such as romance, wedding?
The Bible has 773,746 words in it, and it is the King James Version, including words such as love, husband, wives.
...14,942 words on an average day, and many to their husband or wife. A book on marriage averages around 90,000 words. A sermon on marriage contains around 5,000 words. A gospel tract on marriage usually contains around 2,000 words. And a traditional wedding ceremony usually has around 1,150 words in it. But three are the most cherished words that your spouse wants to hear is what? Typically speaking, it is what people would think. However, according to this article, it is, I honor you. What's the difference between the two? If I love you and I honor you. Can you love someone and yet lack a little bit of respect for that person? But can you honor someone and not love them? Can you honor someone and not respect them? Although we think the words that our spouse wants to hear is I love you, but have you ever told your spouse I honor you? And what that would mean to them when you look at the full sense of the word I love you and I honor you. Just some food for thought there of how and what we say to one another in that. Today's bulletin, you've had a chance to read it or look at it. If you've got it, ask that you get it out. It speaks about the tongue and talks about self-control. And it says, what is the value of self-control? We talk about the value of self-control. To you, what is that? What's the value of that?
Helps me to become more like Christ.
Do what?
I become more like Christ.
You become more like Christ. Was there a time ever that Christ got angry? Did he see it? Did he practice self-control? So when we practice self-control, we are, or we do become, more like Christ. An article that Jacob put in, it's written by Bill Hall, says self-control is that which enables us to hold our tongues when we are tempted to viciously put someone in his place once and for all. Or when you know a juicy bit of gossip that would be entertaining to a group, it would turn you into the life of the party because you know all there is to know on the gossip on that relationship or that marriage or that person. The self-control you're not part of that. It is part of controlling the tongue in this. That self-control is that which enables us to maintain purity of heart and to thrust out evil thoughts before they can take root. What's that mean? To thrust out evil thoughts before they take root. You ever woke up in a bad mood? I'm sure that most of the time my family may wish I would wake up in a bad mood, because I wouldn't be talking, and all. You know, this whole thing about the average person speaks 15,942 words a day, I may exceed that by just a little bit, especially when I first wake up in the morning times. That's when I'm in the very best mood. Nothing's gone wrong. I was granted a new day to live my life. But you wake up in a bad mood, then you go to work and you think, well, it's just going to be awful. The day hadn't started out good at all. Right? One of the kids may have spilt something all over their clothes once they were dressed and ready to go. So that started the day off. One may be having those temper tantrums, because their day may not be going like they wanted it to go. When it says self-control, is that which enables us to maintain purity of heart and to thrust out evil thoughts before they can take root. It's our attitude. It's our attitude. And no one else can control that except for you. When you go into work and your boss is in a bad mood, does that mean that ruins your day and you become angry and you get in a bad mood as well? Sam? Yes. Yeah, I agree. Very good thought. What other thoughts we have on that? Brother Jacob?
Just thinking about what Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Now, we don't, it's kind of like temptation. I mean, our thoughts, you know, we are all going to be tempted. Even Christ was tempted. We are all going to have negative thoughts, bad thoughts that enter our mind. It's what we do with those thoughts.
Right.
That's how we respond to temptation. Whether we're going to take those thoughts captive, it's almost like we, you know, that thought, that bad thought gets in our mind. We start off the day in a bad mood, and we can either put that thought in jail, as it were. We can throw that thought out of our mind and, you know, let Christ rule, you know, our thoughts for the rest of the day. Or we can hold on to that thought. And if we hold on to it, it's kind of like we talked about a few weeks ago with temper. You know, if you just let that stay in your mind, it really just begins to boil over. And it controls us and not only ruins us and ruins our day, but probably ruins the day of everybody around us.
Right.
So we have to, you know, we have to get control of that thought and just let it, even though it comes into our mind, let it pass out of our mind as quickly as it came in, and say, we're not going to think that way. That's not the way this day is going to go.
Exactly. If you dwell on that, that's what happens. In that verse of 2 Corinthians 10, verse 5, I have a note up beside mine, and it's to get rid of things. It's empty the bucket. To me, that's what that verse is meaning. You're into the bucket of the negativity of those bad thoughts of that, and you do that through self-control. If you dwell on things long enough, they become real to you. They become real to you. They may not be real, but if you dwell on it long enough, it will become real to you. But you dwelled on it that long. And so we do not, so part of self-control is not to let evil thoughts take over and control our life. So I do like that article today when it was talking about that and other things of self-control. And then, which we have talked about in the past, not only with a tongue, but a lot of marital problems is because of selfishness. And self-control is part of that. We need to use it and learn it and live it to do that. Then it says, God does not view our uncontrolled actions with amusement. This article says, it says, our temper tantrums and harsh, unbridled words are soul-threatening. A potential bar to the abundant entrance to the Lord's everlasting kingdom, it states in 2 Peter 1, verses 5 through 11. We must not minimize the danger of not having self-control. What do?
Psalms 118, verse 24 says, this is the day which the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. So if we wake up and start our day looking upward, we're going to be a whole lot better for it.
Right.
As you've been saying.
Great. Any more thoughts on that? But then in James 1, verses 1 through 12, talks about here testing your faith, and it says the tongue is a fire, and no one can tame the tongue. However, self-control is part of that, and we must control our tongue. We must not avoid wholesome or real communication. You know, the tongue is a blessing, but it can be a curse at the same time. Depends on what you do with it and how you use it. Talking may hurt at times, but at other times it brings joy. It brings happiness in the home and in the marriage relationship. If you're dating, you've not had your first argument, and have you had good, wholesome talks? If you've been married for any length of time, and you've never had a disagreement at all ever, and are you truly communicating with one another? What I'm saying is there's no perfect marriage, no perfect dating couples. I don't care who you are, how strong your faith is, but my opinion is you will have an argument from time to time or a disagreement. Most of the time it happens earlier in marriage, but those disagreements happen throughout that marriage relationship. It gets better, it gets stronger, the communication line is open. There, and on communication, scary thought, but however, make fun of it all the time. Usually Teresa can finish my sentences before I get them out. Wasn't always easy for her to get there that way, but she pretty much knows what I'm thinking by the expression on my face usually. Because she'll say, it's not what you really mean, is it? Well, I figured I better bridle my tongue But then she and I could talk about it, or whether it's about us or children or other people in our lives, whatever it is. But that wholesome, real communication. And sometimes it takes, as the old saying, a slap in the face to realize that you're not communicating the way you should. That should be open at all times. But oftentimes it's not. You see, homes do not break up, split apart, because of honest communication. They stay together, and they get stronger because of open, honest communication. Regardless how bad it hurts at the time, it makes for a stronger marriage and a stronger family when that happens. Oftentimes you hear people say, well, if I could go back 20 years, I would do this, this, and this, and this different. If I could go back to last week, I would do this, 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 or this different. Would you? I'm 45, and I can tell you I don't want to be 25 again. Teresa will probably tell you she doesn't want me to be 25 again. However, because of that, I believe because of your past, it makes you a stronger person today. No one's going to live that perfect life. You're not going to have the perfect where everything's just roses and candy. You're going to have your ups and your downs. But real, true, honest communication is the key, and it makes you stronger. In James 1, verse 19, this you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. I've often heard preachers preach it, people talk about it, but there is truth to it. God gave you one mouth, and he gave you two ears for a reason. And we don't ever need to forget that. Proverbs 18, verse 13, and Proverbs 29 and 11, as well, involved in all, there must be a willingness to listen. Don't answer a matter before you hear it. In Proverbs 29:11 says a fool would do that. What's it mean, don't answer a matter before you hear it? I've done this to Teresa many times. She'll be talking, well, I'll already have the answer out there before she gets the question out. And then she says, that wasn't my question. But yeah, it was. No. I said, okay, well, I'll sit there and she'll start again. Well, I'll have a different answer before she gets finished. No, that still wasn't my question. Like, oh. So basically, I need to just shut up and let you finish the question, right? Yeah, that would help. And so that's what it means. Don't answer the matter before you actually hear it. Don't assume what you think the person is going to say, because you don't know what that person is going to say. We need to listen. And again, that's why God gave us two ears and one mouth. Brother Jacob?
Yeah, just thinking about, you know, what you said about self-control. That I think it takes self-control, discipline to control our mind. You know, when someone else is speaking, that we are not just thinking about what we're going to say in response, but we are really focused on what they are saying. Because if we're not, like you're pointing out, we'll probably respond in the wrong way. We won't respond maybe with the words that they need right then, because we're not really listening to what they're telling us. And trying to connect that even back to honor, what we've talked about in previous weeks from 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, you know, about living with our wives in an understanding way, and the next thing he says is to show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that our prayers to God won't be hindered. So you see a lot of, you know, our communication with our spouse needs to be good so that our communication with God can be good.
Right.
But if we're not really listening to what our husband or wife is telling us, if we're just, as they're talking, we're already thinking of what we're going to say. And it may be something that makes us feel good if they are presenting some problem, you know, that they've seen in us that we need to correct. We're thinking about defending ourselves rather than thinking about maybe what they're saying about us is true,
right,
or how we need to change. We're not really honoring our husband or our wife. So the 1 Peter 3:7 kind of seems to connect, you know, good communication with honoring our spouse.
Right. And oftentimes we forget about our earthly relationships affects our relationship with God. We think, well, it doesn't affect our relationship with God. How you treat your husband or your wife does. And open communication with one another does. And because if it did not, it says that so that your prayers will not be hindered. It's talking about both there, that your prayers will not be hindered. So it is talking about that relationship. However, there are times that a man may become defensive and resent listening to his family's suggestions, their feelings, and their opinions, considering it an attack on his headship of the house. One who is unwilling to hear a dissension voice, however, said that they are not qualified to lead. In Romans 12, verse 18, If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. When your spouse, when your wife brings suggestions, or has an opinion, or they feel a certain way about something, we husbands should not take that as an attack of our ego. Here in Romans 12 verse 18, when it tells us to live peaceable with all men, that means of those of your own household as well. Doesn't mean just for those that are in this building this morning with us to worship. But we need to live peaceably with all men, if at all possible. However, if it is done in an ungodly way, there's a difference. But I'm talking about a virtuous woman, a godly woman, one who fears God, respects God, and in the same sense, loves and respects her husband. And when she has suggestions or feelings or opinion, it does not take away the headship of the husband. Man is still the decision maker, but a wise man promotes peace within his own household. Man will at least try to consider the problem from his wife's point of view. And then rule as a gentle man. Josiah, what type of man was he?
Seemed to be a very godly.
Well, that's right. Did he take suggestions? He did. He did. A husband who loves his wife will listen to her without it being a blow to his ego or his headship. Yes, the husband is the decision maker on most matters. But my opinion is, I'm not going to go buy a new car without talking to my wife first. Why would I not do that?
She's part of you.
Exactly. When a husband, when a man and a woman gets married, they're not two different flesh. They're one. Some here may and some may not, I don't know. But I've never, ever understood. Man and woman are married. Yes, his checking account at this bank, she has hers over here. She's going to pay the electric bill, he's going to pay the water bill. He's going to pay the car payment, she's going to pay the house payment. I don't get it. You'd be wrong, it's my opinion, but I don't get it. If the husband or the wife don't trust the other one with her checkbook, then you shouldn't be married. Because there's a lot more things more important than a checkbook. If you can't trust them with a checkbook, then you better not trust your husband with a female coworker. You better not trust your wife with your family friend, male friend. Because trust is what the relationship is based on. But again, that's my opinion. I don't understand it because I guess it's never been that way at our house. The day we got married to now, it will be to one of us dies. We don't have things separated. That divides. But you must have that trust in that. Any questions or comments on that? Brother Kevin?
You know, there's a situation for everything within a marriage.
Right.
I know some Christian couples who have separate accounts. I'm not a big fan of it myself, but they have it because early on in the marriage, they had joint ones and things were not managed correctly. Because we all have skills and things that we're good at. And some people are good at money and some people aren't. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, so as we get, at least for me, as I get older, I realize, and I've said it in the class a few times, every marriage is slightly different. It is different in ways we do, but I do agree with what you said about
right. The
trust and things like that. You know, and there's things that each marriage would do differently. There's some husbands and wives that every financial decision is discussed at length, and it probably nausea, and there's arguments and debates, and there's other ones where do what you think's best and go with it. And, you know, so I think it ties into, do you trust your spouse to make the right decision? You know, when me and her were first married, all my coworkers wanted me to go buy a big truck and a big Harley, because that's what they all had. And we had a luncheon, and they all said, hey, let him buy a Harley, you know, so he could ride with us. And I'm like, I don't want a Harley. I don't care nothing about having a Harley. But in their eyes, I just had to get permission from my spouse, and then we were good. And they had no concept of the idea that, you know, I could get one if I wanted to or whatever, but we had the trust in the relationship. Well, for them, that was a foreign concept in the marriage.
Right.
And I think, so everything is slightly different for everybody. But
right.
Going back to your point, although there's a lot of things we could do differently, there might be a reason for it. And I say that because I know of couples that, and I'm sitting there thinking, I don't understand that. And I'd even think, you know, is that even scriptural or is that?
Right. Which,
but the thing is that's their relationship.
Right, that's why I said in my opinion.
Right, and I'm not arguing that at all. I'm just saying sometimes, you know, we think things and we want to put it as a doctrinal thing in its opinion. So we just want to be cautious on that, because I've heard that in the past. I'm like, what do you mean? Where's that in the Bible? And I thought, I was wrong on that. It was an opinion, not a scriptural thing.
Yeah, like from my standpoint, I don't understand it.
No,
someone else's, they do. I may not get it, but. Brother Todd?
I think it goes back to what you said before. It tends to motive. It's the reason behind the actions that you're doing. It goes back to that selfishness or unselfishness, that honoring the other person. And so whatever you do in your marriage that's not listed in the Bible, do this or don't do that.
Right.
It has to do with your attitude about how you're going about it and why you're doing it. And oftentimes, going back to your example, you see couples with that have these different bank accounts, and they do it because they want to have their money. They want to buy their things.
Right.
And so I think it, like you said before, it goes back to the motive, the attitude behind it, the unselfishness of sharing everything with your spouse and being the one flesh that you talked about. Are there times when, like Kevin was saying, that the one spouse may say, you know what, you're better with finances than I am? And that happened to me early on, you know, is that I stressed out about a penny when I was balancing the checkbook, you know, and I'd spend hours trying to find it. So I said, hey, I need a little help with this. And so I solicit my spouse to help me.
Right, and then, you know, like working in the bank, you know, you see this a lot. And but they're not Christian people, but still kind of goes to the same concept with different accounts. And this one couple, and I usually see them once every 4 or 5 weeks. Come in, I'm gonna need to put my husband on my account. So we do. 3 or 4 weeks later, he spent too much money and they take him off of my account. 3 or 4 weeks later, well, it's not working out very well. I need to put him back on my account. 3 or 4 weeks later, I want to take him back off. I finally had them both in there at the same time one day, and I said, y'all taking up an awful lot of time. I will put him on your account. But when I do this time, it's staying on there. Or I can open up him a separate account, and his money can go in there. You can keep your separate account, and your money can stay in here. You know, I never thought of that. That would work better. But that's what we did. 6 months, hadn't seen them. So I guess that's working out. Depends on the situation. Depends on the situation. But again, the thing is, when we're talking about communicating, you know, we need to communicate all things to our spouses. Even if you have the separate accounts and you tell your spouse, I only got $10 in my account, you got $10,000. Is there a huge difference there? Yeah. I know I made jokes when Teresa and I got married. I said, what's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine too. But the thing is, I guess when you don't have a whole lot, you don't have a whole lot to fight over. You just do it together. And you make the best of what you've got, and that's what we should. You must do it all times. The two other pitfalls of healthy communication is being wrapped up in your children. Are children important?
Yes.
Very. How we raise them is important. However, couples may devote all their spare time and energy to keeping their children happy and entertained. While this devotion to our children may be admired, nothing should come between a husband and a wife, and it may destroy their relationship. When children leave home, some husbands and wives discover that they hardly knew each other. They're more like strangers. Your husband or your wife comes first. How does the Bible tell a husband to love his wife?
As himself,
as Christ loved the church? How does the God tell us in his word to love our children? To not bring them into wrath? To raise them up how? Right. Didn't say to love them like you love your wife. To a husband, God, it should be first in his life. When that happens, everything else is in place. Then it should be his wife, then his children. That's how God designed it. The other pitfall of communication is overcommitment. And not meaning to one another, meaning that you're committed more to your job and climbing that corporate ladder than you are to that marriage. And that can cause problem and will cause a problem. When it comes to your children as well, the wife didn't have the children alone. The husband partook in that for your children. You're just as responsible for raising them, taking care of them, as the mother. So we'll get started on building strong homes next Sunday for the husband-wife relationship.